Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this week's edition of IVA Radio Presents, a member of the IVA Radio Network's 60 Minutes or Less to Success radio series of shows. We're getting our paperwork together, and in a few minutes, we'll be turning on the Open for Business line, so stay tuned. Tonight's edition of IVA Radio Presents is being sponsored by Signmark Graphics. Have a new business? Need a logo? How about your branding? Signmark Graphics can create a logo for you and can help you with your corporate ID package and build one to suit practically any budget. So let us show you how to make the most from your logo and get more from your branding. Visit www.signmarkgraphics.com now for details. The signs are lit and IVA Radio Presents is officially open for business. And here's your host, Dr. Andy. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining me for this edition of IVA Radio Presents. This is a pre-recorded conversation I had with business attorney Eric Pelton, and you will get a lot of really great information from it. Before we begin, though, I'd like to take note that IVA Radio Presents is actually being rebranded as KIVA Biz Talk, and that will start premiering at an earlier time in December. So keep an eye out for that. Check our website, www.ivaradionetwork.com, or you can actually go to www.ivaradiopresents.com. And the date our rebranding takes place will be posted there, as well as the new time slot, which will be earlier in the day. And now please join with me as we listen to my interview with business attorney Eric Pelton.
Hi, it's Eric Pelton.
Dr. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm fine. We'll go ahead. It's already recording, so we'll just go ahead and jump right into it.
Wonderful.
Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
My name is Eric Pelton, and I am the founder and manager of a boutique law firm called Eric M. Pelton & Associates. We are in Falls Church, Virginia, and we specialize in intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights, internet, social media issues, particularly for small businesses. We also do some other general small business legal matters, and I've been doing this for 10 years as part of the firm, and prior to that, I worked for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for about 2 years.
Wow. Okay. So you are definitely the go-to man that understands how to set up your business, correct?
Okay. Yeah, we work. We work mostly with a lot of clients that are starting up businesses or entrepreneurs or have recently started up businesses. So we're familiar with all of those issues.
Okay. What are some of the things that business owners that you're seeing when they start up the business that they're forgetting to do or maybe not going as fast as they should do?
Well, of course, the issue that's closest to my heart on that is protecting their intellectual property and recognizing the value and the importance of creating strong intellectual property and then taking steps to notify others of that and protect it. But even a step that comes up even before that oftentimes is, if somebody's got an idea for a business and they maybe figured out how they're going to finance it and whether or not it's just them or it's partners, and they oftentimes overlook actually starting the business as an entity, as an LLC or as a corporation, and deciding which form to use. You know, sole proprietorships are fine, partnerships are fine, LLCs and corporations have benefits as well as some drawbacks, but at least being aware of those issues and talking to a lawyer where I was reading about it and talking to an accountant, and it was reading about the accounting issues that should factor into making those decisions is a step that a lot of small businesses I see overlook. And while it may not be critical to, you know, the success or failure of the business, and it really doesn't impact the business idea at all, it's the foundation for how you're going to organize and run and manage this business as an entity, as a financial interest going forward. And it can be fixed or changed later, but it's a lot easier if those issues are addressed at the start.
Right, right. I've been interviewing several business people, and they said that they were very happy that they started out with partnerships, and eventually, within a few years, had to buy out their partner.
That happens all the time, and the important thing is to have something in writing. How are you going to calculate how much it's worth, how much somebody's put in, how much they should be owed? Were the partnership contributions equal, or was one partner, you know, more responsible working full-time, or some of the other partners had other jobs or other responsibilities? All of these things are easily addressed if they're put down on paper and documented, but if things go on and 2 or 3 years go by and people have different memories of what was discussed, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's time to buy somebody out, or somebody else wants to invest in it, and there's no written agreement documenting those relationships, A, it's a lot more complicated to sort out and takes a lot more time and maybe lawyers and accountants, and B, it often can end ugly because, you know, people, regardless of how good their intents might be, you know, may remember things differently and may feel that they're entitled to different benefits.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, that should also be addressed when you're talking about starting something with your spouse.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, it's even more difficult to deal with that and to put it in writing, but it really, you know, a business is a business, in my opinion, and it should be treated as one and given the respect and attention as one. And that needs to be, you know, I actually just got a call recently from a gentleman who had been married and had been a part of a business that was controlled in part by he and his spouse, and they were in the process of getting a divorce, and there was questions as to the work, the content, and the articles that he had written for the business, whether or not he was allowed to still use those, or whether or not by giving his ex-wife the business as part of the divorce settlement, he had lost all the rights to that intellectual property.
Wow. I actually wrote that up on one of the shows about people don't understand. It's like, just because you're married doesn't mean you're going to stay married. And when business enters into things, people tend to be a little different when you throw stuff like that into the mix. Even with your best friend that you could have grown up with since, you know, sandbox time.
Yeah, it's painful to think of those things ahead of time, but I can guarantee you that 9 times out of 10, it's a lot less painful to think of them ahead of time than it is after there's a problem.
Right. I suppose we should probably go over what is intellectual property?
Yeah. Intellectual property is primarily made up of trademarks, copyrights, and patents. And trademarks are brand names or logos or slogans or any kind of marketing tool that differentiates one business from its competitors. So Nike, for example, is a well-known company, has a well-known creative brand named Nike that makes some suggestions to running to people who know the story of Nike from ancient Greece. And they've got a logo that is well recognized even without the word Nike attached to it. And people see that swoosh on a sneaker or on apparel, and they know where it came from. It indicates the source. And they have a slogan, just do it. Same thing, well recognized. People see that slogan. They know exactly what company, what brand we're talking about, and that's useful to the brand, not only to build up, you know, consumer recognition of it, but to differentiate itself from its competitors, to assure its customers that they're going to get the same quality and service when they're shopping with that brand that, you know, that they're accustomed to from the brand. So trademarks are anything that's used in marketing and branding to differentiate one company from another. Copyrights are original content, and traditionally that's written work like books or artwork like paintings or sculptures or music. But today, that's the amount and types of content is just exploding because of the internet. Computer software can be a type of content. Graphic designs can be a type of content. Even articles or newsletters or blog posts can be a type of written content. And all of that is, to the extent that it's original and unique and creative, is protectable by copyright.
IVA Radio Presents will be back with more of tonight's guest in a moment. Tired of your job search frustration? How about turning your previous work experience into your own small business? IVA's concepts can help you get back on the road to a successful and more fulfilling work-life path. Visit us at www.ivasconcepts.com for more details. IVA Radio Presents would like to invite you to sign up for the IVA Radio Network e-zine. It's free, and it's a great way to keep up to date on the shows, guests, and events we take part in. Visit www.ivaradionetwork.com today and sign up. All subscribers will receive a free gift. And now back to tonight's show.
Speaking of which, now you brought up a good point about the graphics and software. Would websites fall under copyright?
Yeah, they do, for several reasons. One is the graphics and the layout, and one is the content, the written content, to the extent that there's written materials and articles and things like that on it. And then another aspect that the website could have that's copyrightable material is audio or video content. But all of that can be protected with one copyright for the website as a whole. It's important to use the proper copyright notice on the website, ideally on all pages and in the terms of use to explain the intellectual property issues and ownership. And it's possible to file to register the copyright for the website as a whole. Basically, you use some software to pull all the pages and all the content off the site and burn it to a CD and submit that to the copyright office, and you can protect the entire website. Now, most websites are updated frequently, and so it can be difficult to sort of get a static shot of the site, but some static shot, even though it might not be fully up to date a week or a month later, is better than nothing. And what I advise in that situation is that, you know, every year or every kind of a major upgrade to the site as a whole, that the copyright be re-registered. Because copyright registration is relatively simple and relatively inexpensive. The filing fee is only $50 from the Library of Congress. And the forms can generally be filled out by somebody on their own.
Nice. Good to know. Hey, even I now to learn something new there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and their website is copyright.gov, just for reference. Everybody can go there and see the filing fees and see the forms and what's necessary.
Okay. Now, what about trademarks? Say you've got this great logo and you've got the name for the company. Are they separate searches, one for the logo, one for the, or more, I guess we'd have to get a similar logo or something of that nature. How would someone check that?
They are separate trademarks. The logos, the name, if there's different brands or products, they could be several trademarks or several brand names. Or sometimes the company may have an authorized brand and an online brand that's a different name. So those can all be separate trademarks, and they should be searched and protected separately. Generally, the words are far more important than any design, both because the design can be modified more easily without really impacting the business as much, and because when you're doing an analysis between trademarks and determining legally whether or not there's a conflict or a problem, the words generally dominate, because that's how we, you know, obviously in conversation, you can only refer to the words, and the design doesn't have an impact. Well, even if you're sending somebody an email about a brand or about a company, you're not going to cut and paste their logo into it. You're just talking about the brand as a whole. So the words are always much more important. Basic searches for trademarks can be done at the USPTO's website. Their website is www.uspto, and that stands for U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, .gov. And it is also advisable to do a more comprehensive search when possible to see if anybody's actually using the name in advance of adopting a new brand name or a new slogan or a new product name, because even if they haven't registered it, if there's another company that's out there that's been using it first, they still have rights that are called common law rights just based on their use, and it could still be a problem.
Right. I ran into that situation with one of my companies where they did the trademark search, but they didn't do it comprehensively and found that there was another company that had been using it for about 10 years prior to us wanting to adopt it. Now, strangely enough, they, at the time we wanted to adopt it, they had just filed to go out of business. That's like, wow, that's strange timing there. So.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors that can go into that. Obviously, somebody abandoning it is a factor. Another factor is whether or not you're in competing industries at all. So it's possible. Two names can coexist. I don't mean to say that, you know, if somebody's using the same name, it's automatically a bad idea and a conflict. It's only if they're in a related or overlapping or similar industry or field that it's a problem. The example I like to give is Delta Faucets and Delta Airlines. You know, the way that they're sold and used and advertised are so different that nobody's walking into a hardware store and seeing an ad for a Delta Faucet or appliance and thinking that it's somehow related to the airline company, or vice versa. So there's only a limited number of words and names in the world, and they are allowed to coexist, but only when consumers are not going to be confused as to the source or the quality of those things I was talking about, for example, with the Nike trademarks at the beginning.
Right. Well, the strangest thing is, you would believe it, we actually were in the same industry.
Yeah.
So there, that was the funniest thing. But we ended up taking over their business, so that was a good thing.
Okay,
it worked out very well. But, you know, actually, there was a lawsuit a long time ago that took place with Dolby, you know, the surround sound, and that, and a famous musician whose last name legitimately was Dolby, and he used the whole, you know, his whole name. He was ordered, he couldn't use his name anymore, because they were both in the same, you know, I guess, industry sound or whatever. He actually got ordered that he could no longer use his own name. And I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah, well, you know, that goes to tell the sort of the powers of trademarks and trademark protection on the one hand. Obviously, that's a frustrating situation. Nobody would want to be blocked from using their own name. But you could imagine, you know, McDonald's is so well known for restaurants. Somebody would have a difficult time making the argument to open any kind of food product using, you know, even the name Jim McDonald or Bob McDonald, if that was their last name, because it might dilute McDonald's trademarks or lead to customer confusion, which is sort of the, you know, the idea behind the law and behind allowing companies to protect their trademarks is really protecting the customers from being confused or, you know, from walking into a store and thinking that they're getting McDonald's and the Golden Arches and a product that they know and service and prices and finding something totally different.
Yeah, that would cause a problem, and that's trusting. I can see McDonald's would not go for very long.
Yeah, I agree.
So now, can someone starting out, they can research this stuff on their own, or do they need to go to an attorney, or?
Well, it really is complicated to do this comprehensive search and analysis, and attorneys or specialized companies that offer comprehensive searches offer better ways to do this than you can do on your own. One, because they have access to databases, and two, because they have search tools that allow them to search different structures of words of different sounds and spellings that might still be very similar. Because you can imagine, you know, words can be almost identical even with very different spellings. You know, clean, C-L-E-A-N, which is clean, K-L-E-E-N, have the same exact pronunciation and therefore really the same exact meaning. But if you're only searching for one spelling of that, unless you're using a specialized search engine and taking into consideration the differences, you're not going to turn up results with the other spelling. So that's why it's recommended to use a professional, because everything that you're going to be investing in this brand going forward is tied back to this name, and the cost and the impact on your business if you have to change that name after, let's say, a year of investing in getting, you know, spending money on advertising, whether it's website or business cards or brochures or a sign outside your building, and building up customer reputation. And if you're then all of a sudden after a year faced with, you know, fighting for this potentially and spending legal fees or making a change that's going to be difficult and cost money on to replace the signs and all the work on the advertising, it's sort of a lose-lose situation. And that's why it's worth, I basically refer to it as a form of insurance for your brand to do this comprehensive search upfront.
Right.
That said, before you even pay somebody to do a comprehensive search, you can play around on that USPTO.gov website, and you can search the major search engines for variations in spelling and get a good sense on your own that hopefully something's still available. And hopefully then that means when you bring it to the attorney or to the search specialist that there's a good chance that the report is going to come back clean. Whereas if you just pick a name and give it to them without having looked at it at all, you know, there's a chance that there's something obvious that's going to block it, and you can save yourself the money on the search by doing, you know, some initial searching on your own.
Right. Now, what about URL, your domain, same thing?
Yeah, most searches these days will also look at URLs, and of course, if the URL is available, that's always a good sign, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the trademark is available, that nobody's using that brand name, because, you know, many companies have one website that features 10 different brands, you know, on a corporate website. And so just because the domain is available doesn't necessarily mean anything. Also, there could be a variation of the domain with an S on the end or with a hyphen in the middle to replace a space or something like that that could be taken and being used as it by a competitor. But it's always a good thing to check the domains up front, because if the domain is taken and if it's being used by a competitor, you know, then you know right away you need to start thinking about other names.
Right, so that's how we ended up with our company name, because the domain, every one of them was available, so it's like, oh, okay.
Right.
IVA Radio Presents will be back with more of tonight's guest in a moment.
In conjunction with IVA Radio Network and Soul Dancer Network Incorporated, and offering a free teleseminar, the Pay Me What I'm Worth teleseminar is taking place this Friday, October 29th, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern. It will be presented by authors Soul Dancer and Dr. Andy. Sign up and learn how you can put an end to feeling frustrated and undervalued and start feeling empowered. Visit www.ivaradionetwork.com for information. Space is limited for this event, so please register now. Registrants will receive a free audio gift from Soul Dancer himself on defining worth. Registrations that are received by noon on Thursday, October 28th, Pacific Time, will receive an additional special gift of 1 free 30-minute counseling session from Soul Dancer. But you must register by noon on Thursday, October 28th, to be eligible to receive this free counseling session.
And now back to tonight's show.
And I always say, you know, if the domains are available and you're thinking about the name, go ahead and pick them up, you know, because, you know, in the scheme of things, they're relatively inexpensive. And even if you are, you know, when you choose a brand name, pick up as many related domain names as you can for the $10 or $15 a year. It's a lot less expensive than having to deal with somebody else buying the domain name and becoming a squatter or becoming a problem that you're going to have to spend legal fees on and, you know, spend energy on. It's much easier, again, sort of this insurance, a little bit of spending up front, can save you a lot of headaches and spending down the line. Down the road, by registering a couple different variations, register the .net, the .biz, you know, see if it's available with an S on the end or with the hyphen or without a hyphen, those kind of things, and register as many of them as you can. Within reason, of course, because otherwise you can go on forever.
Right. Can you hold on just one moment, please?
Okay.
Okay. Sorry there, I had a little momentary interruption. Where was I? Trying to thought, trademark, copyright. Okay. Suppose you're a small business owner and you're on a very limited budget. What would be some of the tips you could give them just to get out the starting gate without having too many legal phone calls that they're going to break the bank?
Right. Okay. So, as you know, one is, I mentioned, think about your legal structure. It's not terribly expensive or terribly complicated to form a corporation or an LLC, which do give you some significant protections. And I recommend them, and they at least, you know, take one step to remove your personal life from the business life, and they may not entirely protect your personal life from liability, but, you know, even a small step on that is better than no step. That's one thing. The second thing is on the intellectual property, is to recognize all these different brands or types of content that you have and use proper notice. So put at the bottom of your website a copyright notice that says copyright 2010, Eric M. Pelton and Associates PLLC, which is my company's name, and then the phrase all rights reserved. And put in there, put at the bottom or somewhere that, you know, XYZ brand and logo are trademarks of, and then the company's name. You can put a TM or an SM next to the trademark on the upper right-hand shoulder to show that you're claiming some trademark rights in it. That's where the R with a circle would eventually go when you get a registration. If you, you know, when your budget expands a little bit and you have a little bit, you know, I believe that it is worth spending money to protect your core intellectual property assets for, you know, less than a few thousand dollars. You can register your core trademarks and register your core content as copyrights and get some help from a lawyer to do these. And that not only makes your protection stronger, not only allows you to say, we own this, this is ours, the government has recognized it. That helps enormously if there are conflicts. It also helps enormously in establishing your business as saying, we have, what we have here is unique and is important and is special, and it's been recognized by the government. And we've thought out, you know, we've taken the time and the money to protect it and to register it. And I really think that that is a huge boost to your marketing to separate you from your competition to say, you know, we are, you know, what we're doing is important and special, and here's part of why, here's part of the story. And it actually becomes then a tangible asset that somebody could potentially license from you, or if somebody seeks to invest in your company later on, you have these tangible assets to show them. Or even if you, you know, later sell the business. These assets are important assets financially to the strength of the company to say, you know, these are registered, protected. Nobody else can use these. So whoever owns our business going forward is going to be able to carry on the exclusive right to use this. And that has can have an enormous financial value.
Okay. How does one go about picking an attorney that works in this area, in this field? There's so many, you know, online, offline, we can incorporate you, or we can do a trademark, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But how do you find somebody reputable?
I think you have to be careful. It's great to shop around. That's easier than ever online, of course. You know, the things that I would personally look for, the things that I offer that I think are, you know, that I hope help separate me from some of the competition are personal customer service, actually being an attorney giving legal advice. There are some of these sort of document filing and really cheap services that, you know, it's a little bit of you get what you pay for. They're not actually lawyers. They're not actually really doing anything for you other than filling out the forms that you could fill out if you just, you know, read up a little bit. But what the lawyers are doing is giving you much more advice into how you, what the effect of filling out the forms in different ways are, and then also after you file them, what's going to happen if there's some adjustment necessary or responses necessary in handling all of that. So it's, you know, personal service, actually being attorneys, experience, obviously, you know, should be a factor, and what type of fee structures work for you. Some people prefer hourly fees. You might be able to get in the door cheaper that way. But a large part of the industry now is starting to move towards flat fee and value-based billing, where you pay a flat fee either upfront or in stages, and then the client knows from the start what the entire cost is going to be, or at least what the range of cost is going to be, and they don't have to worry about paying to ask a question, paying to call the attorney and get a status update, or paying more if something goes wrong. And the way that different fee structures, fee packages are structured, I think is a, you know, is a growing area where that a growing factor that people are considering in who they hire.
Okay. Now, what's a good time frame? So you've found an attorney. What's the general turnaround time for maybe say going from the trade search to actually being able to copyright?
Right.
And then getting all that actually do business.
No, that's a great question, because these registration processes take a long time. Trademark on Avenues takes a year. Copyright on average can take anywhere between 6 months and 2 years, depending on if you file electronically or physically. The easy answer is it's never too early to start. You can file for trademark registration even before you've opened your doors for business. And that's valuable because the date you file it, you've put a public record out there and sort of drawn your place in the sand. And anybody who comes around and thinks of that name or tries to use that name or tries to file for that name after your filing date is conclusively behind you. And you have, you know, prior rights over them if that were the case. So it's really never too early to file. It's also never too early to do a search. In that it's always better to do a search before you start using the name than it is after you start using the name. But with all of these things, you don't have to wait for the registration issue before you can start using it. It's with the trademark, it's safer if you've done the comprehensive search, you know, then after you filed it, it's generally fairly safe to go ahead and start using it. Because many small businesses aren't in a position just aren't in a position where they can wait 6 months or a year to see if it's been approved by the Patent and Trademark Office and see if anybody's going to file an objection. That's just not, you know, that's just not in their plan.
Right. Most people, especially now with the economy, have moved into trying to start their own small business, and they're trying to make money now.
Right.
Okay. So, I'm going to go ahead.
No, but I wasn't saying anything. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, did I lose you again? Oh, no. Okay. What other things? Let me see. I was thinking, oh, service marks. Now, what's the difference between a service mark and a trademark?
That's a fantastic question. The bottom line is that there's really no difference in terms of legal effect. People all lump both of them together and call them trademarks. Technically, a service mark is a brand name or a logo or slogan that covers a company doing offering services, and a trademark is in connection with goods, something physical like a toy or a car or a tire or or lumber. But a service mark would be like if it's the name of a restaurant, or it's the name of a law firm, or it's the name of a real estate agency, or even the name of a website that hosts social networking or hosts some sort of information. Those are all services. There's no tangible products when a customer pays for X, Y, or Z. They're not getting something physical with a label and a package on it. So it's a service mark. If they are getting something physical with a label and a package on it, then it's a trademark. But legally, they're really the same, and overall, most people just refer to all of these things as trademarks.
Okay. So, but you could conceivably have a company that offers services, say, for instance, like you're an attorney, but for maybe you've decided you're writing books. The books would get copyrighted, obviously, but it would be part of a trademark. You take a little TM on that, and it was as a part of your, you know, for your licensing, you would have a service mark for the company.
Correct. Companies can have both. You're right. Like Starbucks is a service mark in that the cafes are a service, but they also sell coffee by the pound in the grocery store, and that's a product, and that's a trademark. And then they also sell, for example, Frappuccinos is a product. That's a trademark. But the distinction really isn't that important legally or, you know, to the business owner or to the consumer. It's really just a matter of semantics.
Okay. It's always good to know, you know where you stand.
Absolutely. The more you understand, particularly if you're going in to talk to a lawyer or you're getting involved in protecting these things or researching it on the trademark office, the more you understand, the better, for sure.
Right.
That's my goal, is to get out here and educate people.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, honestly, you're my first business attorney that I've got to interview for the show, so I'm very happy that you took the time to do this. Because I know a lot of people always have all these questions, and they don't know where to go, or they'll go to the, like I said, you go to the web, and you've got all this bombardment, and you don't really know who to trust, what things to take, you know, with a grain of salt.
Sure. Yeah, I know it's difficult. There's an overwhelming amount of information, and a lot of it is written in language that's either not easy to understand or not intended for you to understand. It kind of seems like. And I'm happy to hopefully be a part of a new generation of attorneys that's, you know, out there, available to answer questions. I provide lots of free content on my website and my blog and have social media pages and appear on other, you know, podcasts and shows like this to try to spread the word, spread the message of the value of intellectual property and the role that intellectual property has in creating a successful small business. In the end, I think that information benefits everybody.
Yes, definitely. As long as we're bringing up that topic, why don't you tell our listeners how to get in touch with you or find your blog?
Sure. You can find my website is erikpelton.com, and you spell that E-R-I-K-P-E-L-T-O-N. Or if you do a search for my name on any search engine, you can find my website and my social media pages and my blog. The blog is called iPelton, I-P-E-L-T-O-N, and that's at iPelton.com. Or you could go to erikpelton.tv. I've got a bunch of videos, presentations that I've given about intellectual property and small business and social media issues. Those are free videos, hosted by YouTube that you can download or watch. And feel free to send me an email if you have any follow-up questions.
Great. Yeah, you really took advantage of the whole URL thing, didn't you? The TV, the whole...
You know, I have to, I try to practice what I preach. It would be disingenuous of me to be telling all my clients to do this and then not do it myself. And actually, I can't take credit for the .tv idea. I got that from somebody else. And I said, wow, that really makes sense. You know, you can register it for $10 or $15 a year, have it forward automatically to your YouTube page that's for free, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, a website with your own domain name for $15 a year. And I said, that is a great idea. I'm going to use that one as well.
Right. It's funny where you get your ideas from. You'll see somebody else will be like, why don't you do this? Never thought of it. Hey, this is an idea.
Yeah.
So,
And then,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, same thing with social media pages. You know, there's a lot of attorneys out there now talking about social media issues. Some are related to intellectual property. Some are just related to, you know, what you can, what you should or shouldn't do on social media and what the risks are. And you come to find out that a significant portion of these attorneys don't even have accounts and pages on these websites that they're talking about. So, you know, my philosophy was, again, I better practice what I preach. If I'm going to tell people that, you know, what they should or shouldn't do on Facebook or Twitter, I have to understand how those things work, and I have to have a presence there to understand that. And so I'm active on all of those things so that, you know, I can sort of say, been there, done that, and relate to what other small businesses are going through to try to market themselves through those channels.
Yeah, well, you know, that's true, and it's funny. There are a lot of people who are consultants who have that same little problem. They offer advice on all of those, but they're not on any of them.
Yeah, well, I find that hard to trust.
Yeah, that brings up that thing again, yeah. Are they actually there? Are they bugging you to follow them on Twitter?
Well, and same thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, we work primarily with small businesses, although we work with bigger businesses as well. But I started my own practice 10 years ago where I was the only employee, and I was, you know, working in restaurants on the side at the time for the first few years so that I could pour everything that I made in the business back into the business. And that, I think, gives us credibility to counsel small businesses to say, we know what you're going through, not just legally, but practically in terms of making those decisions. You know, you want to invest in your intellectual property, but you also have all these other expenses that you want to spend money on to help you grow. And how do you prioritize that and figure out what you should be doing? So we've gone through all of that and are still a growing, relatively small business, just myself and one other attorney and one full-time paralegal. One experience that we've had that I would also recommend to all small businesses that can take advantage of this is to have college or grad students intern in your office. They're a great source of ideas and also keep us sharp by being able to work with and teach and mentor them. And we've really been impressed with the quality of people and the quality of work from these students that we've had come through the office. We've had probably 20 or so law students that we've mentored over the years, and it's really been a wonderful experience. And I encourage other small businesses, particularly if they're close to universities and they can get young, educated talent that's interested in getting real work experience and take advantage of that.
IVA Radio Presents will be back with more of tonight's guests in a moment.
If you are interested in being a guest on the show or know someone that would make an excellent candidate for a guest, please send an email to producer@ivaradionetwork.com. If you would like a transcript of today's show or any of the previous segments, they are available on the website. Just visit www.ivaradionetwork.com for details.
For all of us here at A Plus U, we look forward to seeing you here again. Thanks for listening.
The IVA Radio Network wants to remind you to visit the IVA Radio Network's website and sign up for our company e-zine today. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's going on the network and to learn about our guests and experts. Visit www.ivaradionetwork.com and sign up today. And now back to tonight's show.
Yeah, okay. I'm in trouble because I don't do that. I live between two major universities and six junior colleges. Yeah, I'm
going to
have to do that this summer.
It's never too late to start. It costs nothing to at least think about it and interview people and put out an ad. And as long as you have a plan for what are they going to work on and you have some structure and you have some time to set aside, particularly at the beginning, to really show them what you expect and how you do things so that they can help you in addition to you helping them, it's really a win-win scenario for everybody involved.
Right. That's, that brings up a know, their bedroom or kitchen, and they're doing all this work. How does that work out, so to speak, legally, if, for instance, you do want to bring in an intern or someone to help you?
Well, practically it might be more difficult, but legally it's not really any different. You have to make sure that in your locality, your city, your county, if you're going to have people come to your house to work, that you have a proper permit if necessary. Some places require permits, some don't. Some don't allow you to do it at all, is my understanding. So you have to inquire locally what's necessary and how you do that. Of course, more and more work is done virtually, telecommuting. It may not be necessary to, you know, meet at the office every day, or it may be necessary only to meet once a week, and you may be able to do it, you know, at a rented office space, sort of shared office space, or at a coffee shop, or at whatever works. But legally, the important thing really has nothing to do with the space. What it has to do with is your contracts with anybody who's working with you. As a contractor, as an employee, as an intern, even as in some sort of partnership to work on a project, is to have contracts, just like you said about having contracts with your partners to form your business. Having contracts with these people is key because there's lots of issues that come up, not just about pay and termination and these kind of things, but about intellectual property, who owns the content that gets created by these people or as a part of this relationship and partnership, and who has the right to register it, who has the right to use it. Those are critical questions that, again, are more difficult to solve after the fact, right? You say, aha, we're on to something great here. Now we're both going to want to claim that it's ours, and we've got to fight for it. If we work that out in advance, there's no quabbling over it, and it's a lot less difficult and a lot less expensive and a lot cleaner to deal with. So that would be my advice on that, is make sure you have written contracts with all of these types of people and make sure they cover intellectual property in addition to other areas. Same thing if you're in a business like consulting or something where you're providing a service for somebody else, you want to make sure that your written agreement with your customers, with your clients, covers who owns what, you know, and what terms are who related to intellectual property, who's bringing what intellectual property to the table, who needs the relationship owning what intellectual property.
Right, okay. Well, that's true. Definitely need the paperwork and process. What about, for instance, from a legal standpoint, I guess it's more of a tax standpoint, but a lot of people are getting pushed towards incorporating in areas like Nevada or Delaware, as opposed to, you know, maybe your own home state. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I don't have a lot of thought on that. My advice is to consult an accountant, probably, and a local attorney to deal with those issues. Nevada, Delaware have favorable laws and favorable accounting and tax benefits, but you still have to generally do some sort of registration and some sort of taxes in your own state as well. And so generally for a small business, incorporating in their own state is going to be sufficient. And then they could always change that as they grow or if they grow into something where the tax circumstances are really going to make a difference to justify that. But it's more of an accounting issue or a local issue, so take my advice on that with a grain of salt.
Right. Now, is it a legal issue? Is it better, for instance, that you have a parent company, and then you have your little subdivisions underneath your parent company? Now, that's more of a legal than an accounting, correct?
Not necessarily. I mean, in the end, they're all a part of the parent company legal for legalities. So I'm not sure of the circumstances where that would benefit you legally to have them separate. Well, I suppose, right, because then one subsidiary could enter into an agreement and it wouldn't necessarily affect the other subsidiaries or related companies. But generally, any contract is going to say that, you know, it affects the parent. The parent company is signing off on it and responsible as well, which really means that all the related companies are involved legally to some extent. And so, I'm not sure that it has a whole lot of benefit.
Right. Okay.
That's not my area of expertise.
There you go. Fair enough. Well, we're coming up at the end of our interview. Do you have any parting comments or advice for the listeners?
I would just summarize by saying that it's a lot easier and cheaper in the long run to address these issues, be it corporate formation, contracts, employees or partners, and intellectual property. It's a lot easier and cheaper to address them up front than it is later on after problems arise, despite the fact that it's difficult to spend the money up front when you're a small and growing business. It's definitely worth looking into and considering. And at a minimum, think about identifying the intellectual property that your business has, the trademarks and the copyrights that it has. Make sure you're notifying people that this is your intellectual property, that you claim to be unique and to be protectable. And then, if you can afford it, think about taking steps to register, you know, your core body of work in terms of trademarks and copyrights, and get those registered with the government and get them really protected to really turn them into valuable assets.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to come on the show and do the interview with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and I certainly invite you back. We're at the end of the interview.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you for joining me on this edition of IVA Radio Presents. Please join me here again next week when I will be joined by success business specialist and author Soul Dancer. It's going to be a great show, so don't miss out. For IVA Radio Presents, I'm your host, Dr. Andy. The paperwork is finished, the lights are out, the closed for business sign is on, and I'm locking the doors until next week. See you then. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
The IVA Radio Network wants to remind you to listen to our other great shows. If you're looking for a job or you just want to change careers, start your week off with IVA Radio's Tips and Tactics. It airs Monday mornings at 6 a.m. These tips are designed to help you jumpstart your career, and the tactics are designed to help put your career back on track.
Attention all you writers, authors, and literary types. IVA Writes Now is debuting on the IVA Radio Network Tuesdays in December. This is the show that brings you the answers to writer's block, publishing, and finding an agent. We'll let you get up close to the publishers, journalists, and reporters, and other published literary talents, and they'll have advice for you on how to hone your writing skills and become a published author. That's Tuesdays in December, right here on the IVA Radio Network.
Are you a plus size trying to squeeze into a narrow thinking society? Well, it's time to stop. Stop missing out on living and join in on learning how to love the size you're in. A Plus View airs Tuesdays on the IVA Radio Network. Join in on lively discussions from featured guests from the business world, retail, entertainment, and healthcare industries. Talk about living well, creating a dynamic lifestyle, and loving the body you're in, no matter its size. That's A Plus View, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Got a business? Want to start it off right? How about a nonprofit, but you're not sure where to go for the answers? Kent Tuesday Business Q&A is here to help. The business doctors, Andy, the Office Venus, and Rick Morgan, will be here to help you with answers to your questions and avoiding the pitfalls about running your business and getting it up to speed fast. Second Tuesday Business Q&A airs on the second Tuesday of the month at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Wednesdays, spend the day with the IVA Radio Network. First, it's KIVA Talk Radio. It moves to its new time at 1 p.m. Eastern, featuring career transition specialists and entrepreneurship experts to help you get the most from your career or transition into self-employment. Then, stay tuned for KIVA Biz Talk, formerly IVA Radio Presents, as it airs in its new time slot of 2 p.m. Eastern. We have guests and experts from the business world offering tips and giving advice on startups, financing, marketing, and growing your business successfully from start to finish with little or no budget. That's KIVA Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. That's 10 a.m. Pacific. And KIVA Business Talk, formerly IVA Radio Presents,
also on Wednesdays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. In the upcoming weeks, be sure to tune in for lifestyle and business guru Soul Dancer, the boomerpreneur Gene Newell is returning, and along with the Business Whisperer. Don't forget to mark your calendars for these great guests. And also debuting in November, The Fearless Live More. It airs daily starting November 8th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Want to know how to get the lifestyle you always dreamed of? Well, we've got an interactive challenge for you. Tune in and see if you can pass the test to learn to embrace success. Even if you don't have it now, this show is going to tell you how to get it. That's The Fearless Live More, airing daily starting November 8th at 5:30 p.m. right here on the IVA Radio Network. If you are interested in being a guest on the show or know someone that would make an excellent guest, please send an email to producer@ivaradionetwork.com. As always, we invite you to tweet us on Twitter at @IVAradiopresent. If you would like a transcript of today's show or any of the previous segments, they are available on our website. Just visit www.ivaradionetwork.com for details.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors
and
shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.